You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody out there in podcast land. Thank you for listening and tuning in to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and I am here today with Mr. Wonderful here, Derek. And we do have a special guest today. We have one wonderful actor, Brianna Judy. Thank you for joining us, Brianna.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we had you on before for a series. I believe it was either Halloween or Christmas. I think it was
Best Christmas Horror Movies.
That's it. Yeah, that's why I thought it was Halloween too. That kind of makes sense. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So thank you for being back on. We really appreciate this.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And today we're going to be talking about something pretty fun, I think. We're going to be talking about our favorite animated features. Just and this is something that can change often because they put out so many animated movies throughout the year. Not necessarily on the big screen, but the small screen as well. You know, Netflix, Amazon, things like that. Apple TV, they've been doing a lot of animated features. And I have a feeling we're going to see a lot more, specifically with the pandemic having happened and them being unable to do in-person filming for just a little while. The studios were probably scrambling for some animated fun. And so I imagine probably in the near future, we're going to see a little bit more of that too. But let's go ahead and get started. Darren, since you're fresh on my mind here, what would be one of your favorite animated feature films of all time?
You know, I'm a little bit dated, a little more of a product of my time. I'm going to go with Transformers the Movie 1985, as one of our guests would say, Orson Welles' last performance as the illustrious Unicron. Kind of the thing, when you're watching animated films, especially when I watch them with my lady, you notice there's a lot of things that are similar. There's a lot of themes that always recur in them. There's a certain atmosphere that's created. Transformers 1985 is kind of iconoclastic in the way that it didn't embrace your traditional animated, I guess you could say, cliches. And personally speaking, as a person who's not wild about the conventions when it comes to animated films, this is something that was just right up my alley. The fact that you had essentially a television series that was extremely popular and it was kind of plateauing into this big feature film. And in the opening scene, you just have the Decepticons invading Cybertron. And I mean, you're seeing Decepticons and Autobots getting cremated in real time in about the first 15 to 20 minutes of the film, which at the time is something that you just wouldn't expect in an animated feature that was primarily marketed towards kids.
Adult.
Yeah, I mean, and when you kill Optimus Prime, who, you know, after you watch the Michael Bay films, this becomes like a reoccurring theme. He gets killed a lot. And then you also had Megatron die, and it's weird how they sort of took that old Transformers generation, and then they molded it, through transition into a new one, where instead of having Megatron versus Optimus Prime, you would have essentially, Leonard Nimoy voiced Galvatron against Hot Rod, who was voiced by Judd Nelson from The Breakfast Club. And I thought that was a very interesting transition. Obviously, one of your favorites is on the soundtrack, Donald, in Weird Al Yankovic on the Planet of Junk, singing the song Dare to Be Stupid.
Which I have done every day since I heard that song.
I love the planet Sharktacon, which is just crazy because you actually have like shark transformers that, you know, sit in their little shark pit. And
how confusing that was for me, Darren, was when they were on the plank, basically over top this the piranha pit with all these robotic piranhas ready to like chew you up, that they had this, it was like this living tribunal head kind of thing that was floating and it would say guilty or innocent. And then it would change faces to change heads, and then it would go innocent. And it would then drop them anyway. And I was like, this is what? Like, that little kid, little Donald, was very confused with why that would still take place. Older Donald was like, oh, I get it. You could still be innocent and, like, put to death. Totally. That was really morbidly adult for them to do, but, like, it resonated with me as a kid. It really freaked me out.
Right. And the thing, too, is you obviously have Unicron, who is an incarnation of Galactus from the Fantastic Four, basically is a planet killer, if you mm-hmm. will. But what's kind of interesting about it is this film's really well written. It's very interesting. It really gets dramatic beats well. You see a scene where Robert Stack, who used to host Unsolved Mysteries, was voicing Ultra Magnus, and he was trying to open up, you know, the orb there, and he was unable to do it. So it's like you've eliminated Optimus Prime, Ultra Magnus, all these fantastic things, and then, you know, there's a dramatic ending inside Unicron where Hot Rod, quote unquote, has the touch, and it's just all over from there. But yeah, this is one that I'm sure our audience has seen many times, but I would strongly recommend it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Brianna, you've seen this one or no?
Well, I'm trying to think because I grew up with two older brothers, and so although I'm very familiar with Transformers, I feel like we never watched the feature film of it. So, I mean, I watched the cartoon a lot, and I know all of the different characters you guys are talking about, but I there is no memory of this movie for me.
Wow. I don't remember watching the Transformers in the theater, but oddly enough, I do remember watching a GoBots movie in the theater. And I think it was the Challenge of the Rock Lords or Battle of the Rock Lords or something. It was when they introduced these, they were basically, you know, GoBots or Transformers, but instead of being cars that they would transform into, they were transformed into rocks, which was a bit odd, I think, but really super cool, though. I still have some of them from when I was a kid. And I remember liking the cartoon when I was little, but I was probably like 4 or 5, so I just remember, like, I have this real fuzzy memory of just sitting in the theater, and I think I was just with my dad, and we were watching this film, and bless him for watching it with me, you know, because, like, it had to be rough, you know? I haven't seen it since. I'm not sure, but I imagine it's probably pretty bad. But the Transformers movie was actually pretty good, surprisingly. If you do go and watch it, I think you'd be surprised at how much you don't hate it.
Well, I mean, the fact that it has the guilty and you get put to death anyways, like, I know in my personal opinion, I think with children's cartoons, as I have a real problem with cartoons that pander to children, and I think kids are smarter than I think a lot of adults like to think that they are or allow them to be. And so I love cartoons that really kind of step outside of the box and don't, you know, can have the opportunity and learning moments for parents to take with their kids. So if, like, you, little Donald, said, oh my gosh, Dad, why are they being put to death when they're innocent, you know? And so, like, that can be a great opportunity to talk about, you know, social injustice and in a way that can be explained to a four-year-old. So I love cartoons that cater to learning opportunities for children.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a smart idea, and I appreciate it now more so as an adult, of course, than I did as a kid. But yeah, totally. And since we're talking with you about this, what was one that you had on your list, Brianna, that just really has always kind of stuck with you? Could be new, could be old.
Oh, well, I was thinking at first about, like, any of the movies that were from my childhood, and hands down, The Little Mermaid was my jam. Like, I had the VHS, and I remember I was 3 or 4, maybe 5, but I remember I challenged myself at that young of age that I was going to watch this movie every day for the entire summer.
Oh, my
so
God.
So I had to be out of kindergarten going into first grade, and by, like, day 8 or 10, my brothers hated it so much that they hid the VHS from me. So that was my favorite, Little Mermaid. Great music. I wanted to swim in the ocean. I knew all of the songs by heart, and I still have the VHS to this day.
Oh, that's great.
That's like a 62-minute movie, right?
Yeah, it's a little over an hour.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so I guess watching it every day, at least, you know, you can reserve an hour and some, you know, it's not like watching Once Upon a Time in America every day.
Right. Well, what if you're
8.5 hours of your evening?
Have you talked to your parents recently about it? Like what they, how they survived going through that every day?
Oh, well, we were kind of latchkey kids, and so I really don't think we had a lot of parental oversight.
Okay.
I grew up in a house and in a generation where we just had the one TV and the one VHS player. Mm-hmm. It was like, I wouldn't say knockout, drag out fights with my brothers each day, but it got pretty bad there for a while. Like,
yeah. Well, I could totally understand if I was your brother and we came home and you're like, I want to watch Little Mermaid. And I'd be like, no, you've seen it 32 times. We don't need to see it a 33rd. And then, like, you'd be like, yes, we do. And then, yeah, I could totally see that. I, especially having two older sisters and I being the youngest and the only boy, like, I totally kind of can, like, I was obsessed with dragons for a while. And I watched Flight of Dragons over and over and over. And I know I've mentioned this before, but I watched so much the tape broke, and then I cried until my dad went and got another one because I just couldn't stand not having it. And so I can get it. I totally get like the obsession. My niece Taylor, when she was little, totally obsessed with Kiki's Delivery Service. So almost every day we had to watch Kiki's Delivery Service, and eventually I wanted to destroy the DVD and never see it again. And now I don't want to watch it. If someone would put it on, I'd leave the room. It's just, you know, we get these films in our head and we get obsessed with them. Do you still watch it often now or?
No, I definitely do not watch it often now.
Okay.
In fact, it's so interesting because as an adult, it's hard for me to sit down and watch a cartoon. Like, there are some animated features that I think are incredible today, and I'm so glad that I did. But my first instinct is to not watch a cartoon, but to watch a live action, you know, feature film of some sort. Mm-hmm. But everyone in my house, and because over the years I've lived with different animators or people that work in the industry, we've, of course, always watched the cartoons. But yeah, no. So as an adult, not so much. I still have the VHS, and I still have a VHS player.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't get played.
Yeah, I have like I have a VHS player that I didn't use for so long. It's been played probably 3 times. It's brand new. Like when my great grandfather passed, he didn't have a lot, but he willed me his VHS player, his VCR, and So I took it out with me out here to LA. It was one of the things I made sure I took out with me. And I only had like 2 VHS tapes that I brought along because they're bulky, you know, I didn't have much. So I tried to play one about 5 years into living in LA and it didn't work. And I was like, oh, crap. You know, like it just got old, you know, and probably a belt snapped or something. I don't know. But it happens, you know, with those.
Well, Donald, not to pass on an opportunity to self-gloss a little bit here, but I do have a VHS-DVD combo.
Ooh, welcome back to 1996.
Wow, yeah.
You're That's fancy. Right, man. They are attached to one another.
Dang, I'm a little jealous.
Yes, and you can still get used VHS tapes at your local library sales, which I did pay one whole dollar for Disney's The Big Green.
Nice. Yes. You know, I still have a Laserdisc player, and I still collect Laserdisc films, because some of them were only put out on Laserdisc, surprisingly. And for a while, that was the only way you could get the original Star Wars in, like, any type of quality, because then when they put them on DVD, I think they, like, edit them a particular way or something, and it just took away some of the... I think the Han shooting thing and stuff like that, you know, got altered. So for a bit, Laserdisc was where it was at.
Well, it's important to know too that like whenever the media of movies is being released, whatever media is hot at the time was what it was intended to be seen on. So from roughly about like 1979 to about 1995, all of those Laserdiscs are really hot items. If you ever watch Apocalypse Now, for example, on Laserdisc, which you have to, by the way, you know, you have to flip it three times throughout the movie. But like a movie like that, where the film texture is a character in the movie, it's very cool to watch it on a Laserdisc.
Yeah. Yeah, I can agree with you for some of those for sure. Yeah. I remember having, I had Batman Mask of the Phantasm, and I still do. It's here somewhere. But my favorite thing was the Ray Harryhausen laser discs, because he did all the special effects for the, you know, the stop motion monsters. And they were all so cool looking. And when I met him back in 2007, before he passed, I had him sign my Clash of the Titans laser disc. And it was amazing. It was like meeting a childhood idol that was never on the screen. You know, their work was, but they never were. And it was just so cool to meet the man behind all of that imagination, you know? That kind of stuff sticks with you.
That's cool. That's really cool.
All right, Donald, what would you like to introduce as your animated classic?
Well, it's not so much a classic yet, as I believe it will be in the future. And I hope I'm not going to be spoiling it for you all, but last year a movie came out, and I believe it premiered on Apple TV, and it was called Wolfwalkers. Now, it's an animated fantasy adventure film. It had a small U.S. theatrical release, of course. The production companies were Cartoon Saloon and Melusine, I believe was the name of it. Mm-hmm. And it was distributed by Wildcard, which is an Ireland/United Kingdom company. So obviously it's a very Irish story. But what I love about it is it's just basically a very Irish way of retelling a werewolf story. Basically just the story of werewolves and how they came to be is in this story. It's called Wolfwalkers. And just to loosely tell you the plot, it's like in the 1600s in Ireland. Kilkenny is the town, and they're working to clear a nearby wooded area that's, I think it was Mr. Cromwell or something was the guy that wanted, he was like the Lord Protector of the town. So basically the mayor, the governor, whatever you want to call. So he was somebody, hold on one second. He was somebody that you would not want to be around. He was not a nice man. He wanted to eliminate all the wilderness. You know, he wanted to burn down the woods to make for expansion and for, you know, almost like a the nature versus machine type of mentality. And these wolves lived in the forest, and they were basically the, I want to say, the spirits of the forest. And they had a mother wolf who was the original werewolf, and then all of these other wolves. Well, this little girl and her dad, who becomes like captain of the police force in the small town, they come to the town, and she runs across this little girl, and they get along, but then she accidentally gets scratched by the little girl. And it turns her into a werewolf. And so basically, the way they play it is it just turns her into a wolf. So at night, when she falls asleep, her spirit leaves her body and turns into that of a wolf. So her body is extremely vulnerable while she's out in this spirit realm, living as this wolf out in the town and in the forest and stuff. And it's all about them trying to eliminate these wolves, and then you understanding how important the wolves are to not only to the environment, but to the people themselves. So it's a very cute, very fun, beautifully animated, hand-drawn animated story that you don't get much of. And honestly, I'm really disappointed in the Academy this year. I know they nominated it, but for not selecting it. I think Soul had some really good moments, but overall, I feel it's a far superior, Wolfwalkers is a far superior film to Soul, and I really wish they would have selected it.
Well, when you talk about like the Oscars especially, I think it's unfair when people say things that the Oscars quote-unquote got it wrong. I think what always proves the Oscars to be right is over time, are people still going back and watching the movie? I always use the example of The Hurt Locker winning Best Picture against Avatar. It's very obvious that people will go back and watch Avatar 100 times over before they'll watch The Hurt Locker again. So I don't really hate the Academy when they make their choices, because as I was told by someone on the Academy, the nomination is always the award. The winner is just the person who got ahead in the horse race. And if the movie is, it sounds interesting. I saw clips of it. I think the animation is very interesting for sure. I mean, there's going to be a classic element to it that maybe Soul is not able to hold up to.
Yeah, you're correct. You could be quite possibly correct on that. And I think you will be. I think it's a great animated, already a classic in my mind. And I won't stop telling people about it and how really good the story is and how just pure it is. And I think everybody should watch it just for an important lesson. Again, Brianna, you would like this one for that specific reason. It doesn't talk down to children that would be watching it. It actually tells them how important the environment is, how important animals are, and that we should respect each other.
Yeah, that's cool. I hadn't seen Wolfwalkers, but I did hear really great things, you know, when the Academy Awards were, you know, everyone was talking about the buzz on the different awards or the different shows that were nominated and different films that were nominated. I myself, it's so interesting because I did watch Soul, and our roommates and I watched two movies. We did a double feature one night, and we watched Wonder Woman 84, which was horrendously horrible. And we literally stopped. We finished the movie and we complained about it for like 3 hours. We couldn't stop talking about how awful it was. And then we were like, oh my gosh, we have to watch another movie. Like, we have to watch something that hopefully is good. And so we put on Soul, and at the end of Soul, we then talked for 3 hours about how great it was and how it touched us and how it dealt with so many different topics of, you know, the afterlife and what a soul is, and how interesting it animated it, how interesting the story was, and just how connected we felt with that film. So I was a huge, huge fan of Soul. And in fact, tonight, knowing that, you know, we were going to be on this podcast, I asked all my roommates, I was like, hey, all-time favorite, what's your favorite animated movie? And, you know, two out of three of us, Soul was like the first thing we said. We were like, oh, yeah. And we know that it's probably because we saw it more recently, but like, hands down, solid, solid, solid film and a beautiful story.
Yeah. That's, I think it's the same, is it the same writer or same director that did another feature for Pixar?
I think it's Pete Docter, actually.
I'm sorry?
I think it was Pete Docter.
And he did that one with the little girl and all the personalities, right?
Yeah, the Inside Out?
Yeah, that's it. Inside Out. Yeah. I think it was the same guy that did Inside Out, but I could be wrong, but I think so.
Yeah, which is, you know, something my personal resident Pixar expert raves about Inside Out and says it is one of the classics that gets overlooked in the Pixar universe. So, and I know we've had this talk before on previous podcasts, so tune into those podcasts, folks. We had a very deep discussion in our Pixar countdown about Inside Out. So,
yeah, I don't know where Soul would lie for me. I don't think it would be near the bottom of my list for sure. I very much enjoyed it. But after watching Wolfwalkers, I think, you know, my tune changed a little bit, but I did enjoy it. I watched it around Christmas time. And had a good time with it. I was glad it was available on Disney Plus. I'm glad they put it out so people could enjoy it around that time. It was very nice. Darren, do you have another one that you would like to mention?
Yeah, so I'm going to go something that's a lot more adult-themed, and by adult-themed, I mean adult-only in age, probably not in maturity, and I'm going to go with 1999 South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, it comes to a viewer like a sledgehammer to the jaw when it comes to subtlety. It is definitely not some of their deeper work, if you will. What I found to be kind of unique about this movie is that it is an all-out frontal assault against all of your senses, which I normally don't like those kinds of movies because I don't think they're very well thought out. And the messaging in this movie is really oversimplified. I mean, you know, it deals with the issues of censorship, but the kind of sick things that go on in Trey and Matt's mind is what's interesting to me. So
yeah,
when they hit on an idea or if they hit on a situation, it's really classic and you laugh about it for a week. And when they miss on something, you just grimace for, you know, the moment that you're in it. You're like, oh, God. And some of those moments are here. So what one of the unique things that they added to this is they added a musical theater a movie musical element to it, like pretty much every other animated film did at the time. I mean, Disney set that precedent early, and it really hasn't been abandoned all that much over the years. So their song, their Oscar-nominated song, Blame Canada, will always be a classic to me.
Yes.
Not because it's necessarily grounded in common sense, but it's ridiculous. And is there any truth in the song Blame Canada about Canadians? No, not at all. It's ridiculous. But the whole idea that, you know, parents can be completely overprotective about content. I'm not saying that parents should not monitor the content their kids watch. They absolutely should. But there is, to some degree, you know, when you get out in the real world, you know, these are things that you will be confronted with. I think that the whole idea of just the imagery of Saddam Hussein and Lucifer in a homosexual relationship is absurd to the nth degree. But it's South Park. Like, you won't see this in any other animated person's mind. Which is kind of what it is. And I think in many ways, they love to be offensive to get their point across. Like I said, I think that they're better than this in many ways. But a few things that they hit on are just absolutely perfect. The whole idea of Terrence and Philip, that is a very realistic movie that teenage boys especially would laugh at. They would look up to people like that. And
I'm sure that us as teenagers laughed, and I'm sure that teenagers now are still laughing.
Yeah. No, but I just think South Park, bigger, longer, and uncut, I give it more points, if anything, for its sheer uniqueness.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think our audience has seen this, so I'm not going to elaborate any further on it.
Right. Yeah, it was a very interesting film, and I think it came out not too far away from, if I recall, Beavis and Butthead Do America. So we had
about 3 years.
Yeah, so we had some like adult-esque animated content that was coming. That was like the first time it was interesting to be able to hear the curse words on the big screen coming from the little boys and stuff, and then, you know, Beavis and Butthead's dumbass antics on the screen, and those are two properties that I never thought I would see in a movie theater. You know, when you think of movies in a movie theater, you don't think of South Park and you don't think of Beavis and Butthead. Like, why would you? But yet there they are. Brianna, did you have another one that you'd like to mention really quickly?
Well, it's so interesting because I talked about Soul earlier, and I was like, oh, what are the other really great animated feature films that I love? And I'm like, oh, Up. Obviously, I like things that make me cry.
Yeah. It's a fine choice.
I mean, Up was so great. I remember going with my roommate at the time and one of my guy friends, and at the very end of the movie, he turned to me, like, just teary face, like, tear-stained, and he was like, so I'm really glad I saw this with a couple of girls. I mean, I'm not crying, you're crying. Just, it was really good, though. And I love how, you know, again, the animation has the ability that in the first, you know, 10 minutes of the movie, you're so emotionally connected to the character. And it's so, so real. You know, the emotions are real. And for an animation to be able to do that, to connect on such an emotional level, is just like big ups to Pixar, you know, big ups to the writers, to the directors, animators. Like, I think it was just so well done, and certainly a shift in, you know, animations.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was Pete Docter. But he did direct Inside Out, but he did also direct Up, and he also did Monsters, Inc., which is my personal favorite Pixar. So just with us two and with Katie, like just out of the four of us that we were just talking, three of us have our favorite films directed by this guy. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, he knows his niche.
Well, what I like with Up, you know, and as far as the Pixar universe goes, I think Up really transcends the Pixar universe. I think folks that would be rather hesitant to watch a feature of digital animation would be drawn into Up in many ways. So yeah, it is definitely, it's a very touching movie. It's funny, but it's not too funny. And Ed Asner is just brilliant as the lead with his voice. So yeah, fine choice.
Absolutely. I'm going to mention one more really quickly, and then we're unfortunately going to have to close out. But I think that it's often overlooked as being an animated film because there's live action elements to it. And I'm talking about Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Oh, so good. Oh, gosh. Yes.
Yeah. Written by Jeffrey Price and Peter S. Seaman. It was produced by Frank Marshall and Robert Watts. It's loosely based on the novel that came out in the 80s, Who Censored Roger Rabbit, which is basically talking about the transit system in San Francisco. And
actually,
it's where? I'm sorry?
It's the transit system in Los Angeles, not San Francisco.
Was it Los Angeles? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So it was the transit system in Los Angeles and how the freeways and stuff basically in cars and things, they wanted to push that instead of the transit system. And they kind of just pushed the transit system out of the way to make more money in for these companies to you know, push their wares, so to speak. So it was really kind of sad.
Well, yeah, there was actually historically at that time, there was an agreement. And some people say it was a conspiracy. Other people say it was just good business. But essentially it was Firestone Tire and Standard Oil and General Motors all got together. And they were the ones that actually purchased the transit lines, the train lines, the trolley lines that ran throughout the entire city of Los Angeles, which at the time had more miles of railway than New York City did at that time. And they basically bought it all up and then told the city, they were like, oh yeah, so you guys don't have any rail lines anymore, but look at these amazing buses you can have that are made by General Motors and tires provided by Firestone, and we use Standard Oil. And so it really did shift. And that's actually one of the reasons that the movie is so great, like just politically talking about what happened at that time, but also is one of the reasons that, like, LA, we have such terrible traffic, and it can be trailed back down to that point in our history where we had a huge shift in my personal opinion, in greed, in our economy, and we're still to this day catching up with improvements and expanding our public transit system here in the city. So
yeah, they're like, you know, many years later, whoops, you know,
yeah.
We kind of screwed up, and now people can't get from A to B very easily, and our air quality is very poor. I mean, you know, LA is known for a lot of things, beaches, sunny weather, but smog is another one. They're known for bad air quality, and you can look it up any day you pull open your phone. I don't know about Androids, but specifically with your iPhone, you can pull up, you can click on weather, and it will tell you in your area how the air quality is. And I've never seen it in the green where I live. It's always in like the, if it's just regular, a regular day, it's like yellow to orange, like moderate. So yeah, the air quality is always just like moderate, unless there's a fire or, you know, something else terrible happens. And then, of course, it goes even worse.
Well, Donald, you know that we are multimillionaires due to this podcast. If you would just like to go buy property in Santa Monica, the air quality there is outstanding.
Yeah. I wish that I could own a property in Santa Monica. That would be great. I think if they had where you could purchase a square foot like they do of, you know, like an Irish castle or a castle in Scotland or England, you know, and they'll protect it for that, you know, piece of time or whatever. I think if they did that in Santa Monica, there'd be a lot of people purchasing just so they can combine all their square footage and then have a home that they could all build and share there. All 750 people that purchased in on that square footage areas, they could build a little shack and they could all live there together or at different various times throughout the year, make a timeshare or something. It's a great idea. Yeah.
Man, I despise Santa Monica. Can we make that a future podcast topic? Why Darren hates Santa Monica? Because I have reasons. It's a long list.
You know, we could. we definitely could. That's going to be a little bit down the line, though. We have so much to talk about before then. With that, I actually think that we're going to have to close this one out. So, Darren, always a pleasure, of course. And Brianna, thank you for being on, being our special guest. We very much appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Brianna.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's fun. It's always fun chatting with you guys.
Yeah, we always have a good time. So thank you again. And for those that do not know, we do a live video podcast on YouTube every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time on the Rumble Spoon Productions page on YouTube. We do that from 7:30 usually till about 9:30 sometimes even. And we have a whole host of different topics and stuff that we don't normally talk about on our audio podcast. So it's a lot of fun, a lot of participation from the audience and so forth. We do occasionally have some giveaways and things as well. So please tune into those if you can. Also, we do our regular audio podcast, which you're listening to now. They are available usually on every Thursday or Friday, give or take a week here or there. They are on and available on Spreaker, which is Darren's favorite. We also have them on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and a whole host of other podcast platforms. Odds are if you can't find us, go ahead and reach out to us then. Reach out to us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Let us know, and we'll get on that platform for you so you can listen to us with ease. So again, thank you, Brianna. Thank you, Darren. And thank you to the listeners. And perhaps if we don't see you out and about anytime soon, we will see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.